This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, as we attempt, not all that successfully, to normalize during COVID-19. We're lifting the lockdown in certain parts of the country, and no, we're not lifting the lockdown in New York, where this broadcast emanates from, unfortunately, but we're going to lift the lockdown a little bit here on our weekly Q&A with Layla, because maybe we're experiencing a little bit of COVID-19 fatigue. We want to change the pace and answer some questions of a general character. Radioprogram@AOL.com, the destination for questions. Doesn't have to all be coronavirus-related, although we certainly will take questions around that. And probably will for some time to come. But questions of a general nature, radioprogram@AOL.com. So how you doing, Layla? We have something that is postmarked from an exotic venue.
Yes. Coming from Botswana, Africa. This is from David. And he talks about, you know, facial masks, whether to wear or not to wear. So he says, from a rather remote part of the world, Kazungula, Botswana, where now that the borders have been closed, tourists have departed, and a strict lockdown is being enforced, the wearing of masks has also been an issue, particularly as there's a shortage of manufactured paper masks. David says, as a simple test, I suggest everyone should think about whether they can get a homemade cloth mask or whatever type of mask. So here's the test. If I wear a mask and later it is proven to have been of no beneficial value, what have I lost?
Exactly.
As opposed to if I do not wear a mask and I contract COVID-19 and later it is found that masks afforded some protection, what have I lost?
Exactly.
I think you would agree with me. It's no contest. Hence, I wear a mask in public.
Okay.
Mine is made of toweling, is worn around my neck, only to be put on when I interact with people, which is kind of infrequent. So I apply this logic to many areas of my life. Obviously, not all choices are as clear-cut as this one, but it generally helps one focus on the possible solutions. May all Americans and the rest of the world population see the sense in wearing masks at this critical time.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about masks. First of all, this is an example of tremendous government and public health misdirection. Because, I mean, you remember very well at the beginning of this, they said, look, you don't need masks. The masks are in short supply. Save the masks for the people in the hospital. They really need the mask. So, I'm asking myself, well, if they, on the one hand, they're saying they don't really protect, but then they say save them for the people in the hospital. So they, I guess they do protect. So it's kind of like, it's a little bit of a mixed message there. So, then they said, really everybody should be wearing a mask. So, the problem, though, is, as they rightly pointed out in the beginning, the masks are not 100% protective. You can cough or sneeze around a mask, and you can, most masks are not 100%. Also, unless you're wearing an N95 mask, which is pretty effective at filtering the stuff coming into you, masks, especially cloth masks, are somewhat porous. Now, they will stop big particles like, you ever talk to somebody and you feel like, oh my goodness, I see a little droplet on my glasses. That means this person is spitting at me. I mean, literally, that happens. So Yeah, those masks will stop the big droplets, but the tiny aerosolized particles can go through. I mean, you can breathe through those things, and they have a mesh. And if you looked at them under a microscope, you'd see that mesh. It's not an impermeable barrier unless you're wearing an N95 mask. Here's a bit of a problem with an N95 mask. I've looked at some studies on N95 masks. Mm-hmm. N95 masks actually have been shown to deoxygenate people. Now, this doesn't matter so much, but, you know, say you're an elderly, debilitated person and your oxygen levels are already low, and you put on one of those masks, that's going to drop your oxygen saturation down because it's so effective. The other thing is, I noticed this. I initially had an N95 mask, and I said, well, I'm going to go into a store, you know, I'm going to go to the grocery, and there's a lot of people, and social distancing, they hadn't worked out that well. And I said, you know, I'm going to put a mask on.
Because it's tight in the grocery store aisles. It just is,
And this is before they were limiting the number of people who could come in. So I said, let me put on a mask. And I just felt, like, anxious in the store, and I felt sort of uncomfortable. And then I left, and I said, God, I forgot, you know, a couple of items. I just felt messed up. And I said, well, I chalked it up to, like, I'm nervous because it's, you know, there's an epidemic, there's contagion, and, you know, it's kind of skeevy being in public. But actually, it's been shown that these
masks. You couldn't breathe.
I couldn't breathe.
And
they actually have looked, those, when hospital personnel wear those masks, they've actually done some studies that show that their judgment is slightly impaired. Their decision-making abilities are undermined. And part of that is due to the fact that you're rebreathing carbon dioxide,
which
you need to expel. So if you rebreathe a lot of carbon dioxide, it will cause you to be slightly, cognitively impaired is the only word that I can give you on that. And, the masks are sort of, they're moist because the secretions that you breathe out, you know, condense on the mask, and they're kind of icky.
They can get icky if you're wearing them, rewearing them, and that could be itself become a petri dish. Now, factor into this an elderly person with COPD in a mask like that.
I think I'm a well-trained athlete, you know, and yet I certainly am not going to run with those unless it's sort of like running. You know, there's some people who actually run with devices that limit their oxygen supply for it to simulate high altitude training. That gives you like a training edge if you're training at sea level, you know, but, or, you know, if you want, you can, you know, run with, a weight vest or, you know, a ball and chain or something, but it is an impediment. It's an impediment to breathing. So that being said, you know, these masks have, there's another side to this mask story. The other thing about masks, while they do create sort of a public-spirited, like, we're in this all-together thing, they do create, I think, a higher level of anxiety. And, you know, there's got to be a point where we have to relinquish our masks. But some people, I think, are going to be afraid to wear masks. You know, I was saying to somebody that I was walking with the other day, I said to her, we're all Asian now. You know, because it used to be, I mean, remember prior to this, you'd see like usually an Asian person. You'd see like a person with a mask. You'd say, oh, that's this Asian thing that they have, you know, where they think that somehow they're going to be protected against contagion, you know, the flu. And it's, you know, they wear this in winter months and they wear it when they're on the subway. It's like, we're all Asian now. You know, it's an affectation that we've picked up from over there.
I think also psychologically, Dr. Hoffman, the other problem with the wearing of the mask is you can't tell a person's facial expression.
Exactly.
So you don't know what's coming at you, if they're mad, if they're dangerous, or if they're happy.
It changes communication.
There's no indication.
Yeah.
So that's a little disconcerting.
Well, it gives more importance to the eyes, you know.
Yeah.
So is that, you know, are those eyes like angry? Are they flirtatious? You know, this actually kind of harkens back to, you know, when I was single and I was in my training and, you know, we'd be in the operating room and I found it actually kind of sexy because, you know, we were all wearing masks. Mm-hmm. And so it was all about eye expression. So I would say, I'd glance over at the surgical nurse and the nurse would meet my gaze and there was an, there was a certain frisson, you know, as our eyes met, you know, and it's like, oh,
Wait, I'm waiting for Barry White music to happen. Right.
So anyway, you know, it's going to change. My iPhone doesn't read me at all. It's like facial recognition. Sorry. You know, I got and it's
right.
up in my code.
That's
it's
not like, gonna work.
I don't recognize you. Anyway, so masks on the subject of masks. All right, enough on that.
All right.
You know, I mean, and finally, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to wear a mask and then, you know, put the mask up, put the mask down, poke yourself in the eye with the finger that you moved the mask with, you know, poke yourself in the eye with the corner of the mask, you know, that actually creates more opportunity for external pathogens to enter your body. So
just, you have to be careful how you remove that mask.
Yeah.
Precisely.
And then you,
so that could be more of a problem than anything.
The masks. I mean, these masks are supposed to be disposable. That's why there's such a shortage of masks. An N95 is a use it and then get rid of it mask. It's not a mask to be reused.
Right.
And yet they're expensive. They're like, you know, $5.
And people are re-wearing these masks over and over because they don't know. I'm talking about lay people, not medical personnel, obviously. But, you know, you use that over and over. It gets funky. I'm waiting to see rashes around people's mouths and noses and cheeks.
The healthcare workers have rashes on their noses and around their eyes where the goggles are applied. They actually have to apply steroid cream to reduce the irritation from that. That is a real thing. You can. It's almost like that red badge of courage that you've been wearing a PPE, you know, a protective garment or device. That to have those marks around the face. I've seen some healthcare workers who have that. Anyway, let's move along to additional questions.
Well, we've got a question from Marianne. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Is a grill mat, and this is copper grill mat, is a grill mat the same as Teflon, which I know is to be avoided? Now, this is at coppergrillmat.com. I took a look there.
Yeah.
And basically, if you've heard of, you know, if you've seen the infomercials on the copper pan,
I've seen them.
All of that, it's the same kind of thing, except that this is a grill mat.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't looked at those carefully.
Yeah.
My concern is that copper is toxic. Copper is an essential element, but too much copper is definitely bad for you.
And it'll antagonize zinc.
It antagonizes zinc, but also there's copper toxicity, and it's a neurotoxicity. So I'd be concerned, especially people with certain genes, and I believe it's more of a problem in women, that they are more prone to copper overload, for which the answer is to expose yourself to less dietary copper. But also to use zinc as a way to counteract the copper.
Yeah.
Zinc and copper on kind of a seesaw. The more zinc is actually used as a treatment for copper overload, you know, high dose oral zinc. So, I don't know. I mean, I see those and I go, they're kind of inexpensive, and that makes me think quality.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, maybe you and I can do a little research on that and see if there's any potential downsides to that coating, because it's probably not pure copper, and it's copper polymer in some way that's held into place with some other material. And maybe that material is not Teflon, but it may not be the safest material to take in.
Now, Teflon is probably the worst stuff to cook on.
Yeah.
So I would still, if you had to choose
it's an endocrine disruptor.
I'm always advising everybody I meet who asks me, well, what about those new green pans, you know, with that white coating? Well, I've gotten one of those green pans. It didn't last more than about a half a year, for one thing. I've got another newer green pan that's lasting a little longer, but stainless steel.
Stainless steel or cast iron. Cast iron.
Cast iron.
You know, cast iron
is good. Especially the enameled cast iron.
It's very heavy. You know, for older people who have arthritis or carpal tunnel syndrome, it's hard to pick up those pans.
Yeah.
But they're inexpensive, and they really have nice heat properties.
Yeah. So, Marianne, thank you for that question. Go back to using stainless steel.
Okay. And by the way, cast iron pans shed iron. People have iron overload, they're a problem, you know, and some people do have too high iron. You know, I would check your iron before you invest in a whole set of cast iron pans.
Exactly. Now, when you think of
beneficial,
a Dutch oven, like a Le Creuset or something like that, which is enameled.
Yes.
It does confer some protection that way.
Yes, that's ceramic. So, ceramic, I think, is
ceramic.
Pretty stable. And while it's a little, the surface is a little fragile, they crack, they can be damaged. So you have to be using, wooden and plastic.
Exactly. You don't want to use metal.
Silicon, yeah.
Yeah, silicon or wood. Mm-hmm. Wooden spoons. And make sure your wooden spoons aren't cracked. Folks, your wooden cutting boards and spoons should not be cracked.
The crevices,
you toss them.
In the crevices are bacteria?
Well, sure. You can collect bacteria there.
Okay.
So, like, we've got this nice big wooden butcher block board. Mm-hmm. So, if there ever is a crack or anything, you know, the sanitizing and all of that is not going to be enough. So, from time to time, my husband will take that out into the shop, sand that thing down.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's almost like a brand new surface.
Mm-hmm.
And bring it back in, and then we resanitize it, and so forth and
so
on.
Man, I could use a husband. Jeez, where do I get one of those? It's a little hard these days with COVID-19. So
right.
Somebody handy. You know, it's like
somebody handy. Exactly.
It doesn't have to be a conjugal relationship. You know. Okay, Layla. At this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share an important message with you. Here goes. Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoppen with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make intelligent medicine a continuing free resource to you throughout the current coronavirus pandemic. And now back to our questions. What's next, Layla? Let's hear it.
We've got an email from Denise, who's asking about milk and telomeres. Denise is asking,
That's almost like random, milk and telomeres?
Yeah.
Okay.
So she's asking, Yeah. What milk should I drink? I use milk for eating occasional cereal and to put in my coffee. I recently read that people who drank 1% or non-fat milk have longer telomeres than those who drank full-fat or 2% milk. CLA, conjugated, conjugated linoleic acid in higher fat milk has also been touted as nutritionally beneficial.
Yeah.
So what milk should I be using? Thank you and stay safe.
I mean, I'd love to see that study, but look.
I don't think it's a study. I think it's maybe a commercial article from somebody who's still fat phobic from the 1970s that said, yes, you must drink skim milk for longer telomeres
I think it's an assertion, not a scientific fact. I think it's, I would venture to say it's fake news, fake health news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. So I think this whole thing with non-fat milk, as you may know, and I'm sure you're aware, is evaporating. It's evaporated milk.
Yes.
because, in fact, there are studies that show that not only is full-fat dairy not harmful, it may be beneficial in terms
because
of cardiovascular risk.
Because of the CLA.
Yeah. Because of the CLA, but also maybe because of the fact that skim milk doesn't provide enough satiety, so you end up eating like a house on fire of other types of food that are bad
it's
for you.
It's all lactose, which is all sugar. Lactose is a form of sugar.
Yeah.
People forget that when you're drinking a glass of milk, you're getting sugar there.
Yeah.
Non-fat milk, skim milk, will have more of that lactose, of that carbohydrate, than full fat will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you're going to drink milk at all, make it the full fat.
Yeah. Got it.
If you're having milk.
Yep. I'm all for it. And, you know, and if you don't do, I mean, this is not to say that some people aren't intolerant to milk and dairy products. I mean, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
But if you're tolerant to milk, if you don't have lactose intolerance
and you don't have a dairy allergy,
right. You know, there's so many other, there are many reasons to avoid milk. And not the least of which is that milk is a repository that, you know, when it's not organic, of a lot of hormones and, you know, pollutants. So it, you know, there's some downsides to milk. I'm not saying that milk is a wonderful thing to have a lot of necessarily, but some people can tolerate small amounts.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We've got an email from Anna. Anna is 61 years old. I'm interested in knowing if there is a natural cure for mycosis fungoides.
Well, that's a tough condition. Fungoides. It's a T-cell lymphocyte skin cancer. A T-cell lymphoma. It's a T-cell lymphoma of the skin. And it sounds awful. Mycosis, it sounds like, you know, like moldy, mushroomy kind of stuff. And fungoides is obviously like a fungus.
Yeah.
But it's actually a cancer. It's not a mold. It appears fungal, but it is a T-cell lymphoma. And the research that I've seen on it has to do with vitamin D. And it's thought that some people who have this condition may need more vitamin D. I can't tell you that vitamin D is going to cure it, but it might be helpful. That's about as far as I'll go on that. Is, you know, I'm trying to stick to the facts, and I can say, you know, use EGCG and, you know, make a lot of speculate about what helps for that. Perhaps, you know, since a high dose intravenous vitamin C is helpful for certain lymphomas, it might be helpful for this. But, you know, I think the science is really robust on proving that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anna, best of luck to you on that. Get your vitamin D levels checked. And if you are taking vitamin D, make sure it's vitamin D3. That's ergocalciferol, not vitamin D2. That's rather cholecalciferol.
Cholecalciferol. Thank you.
Right. Vitamin D2 is the ergocalciferol.
Yeah, that's the kind of the mushroom-derived.
And, you know, there's really, you can't get much. I still see articles of conventionally trained nutritionists saying, hey, you get vitamin D from your diet. No, you have to drink a quart of milk. Mm-hmm. You have to drink a bushel of sun-ripened shiitake mushrooms and eat about 2 pounds of salmon a day. You can't do that.
Yeah.
And no, you need more than your 200 or 400 IU that they're all talking about, which doesn't do anything at all. It's simply not enough.
Yep.
So,
you know, I spent some of the weekend attending a really wonderful webinar on genetics. And the genetics provides us a lot of clues as to who needs more vitamin D. And it's all derived from a saliva sample. There are certain what are called SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms, you know, for short, they're called SNPs, which dictate more or less of a response to sunlight and oral vitamin D. So this, you know, people have asked the question all the time, is like, why do I need so much vitamin D? Well, the people who need enormously more vitamin D may have a double hit on a certain gene that governs vitamin D binding, vitamin D binding protein. Or they might have, conversely, vitamin D receptor polymorphisms, which means that their blood levels are, you know, seem adequate, but they need more to drive the cellular reactions that vitamin D is responsible for. That's the vitamin D receptors are implicated in mycosis fungoides to some extent, is so that blood levels of vitamin D may not reflect adequacy. You may have to go high to get a therapeutic response.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I mean, there's a lot on vitamin D. It's very nuanced science. It's not like, you know, here's the right dose for everyone, one size fits all. It depends on a lot of things. And we can actually get a handle on that through genetic analysis. We got time for one more quick question, if such there is, because we're running a little short on time.
We've got, let's see here. We've got, I don't have a name for this person. I'm a runner who runs about 30 to 35 miles a week at about an eight and a half minute pace.
That's a very good pace. That's a good pace.
That's great. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've noticed over the last year or so, I've been wheezing and coughing after my runs for a few hours. More wheezing than coughing. Also have some excess phlegm. Is this just exercise-induced asthma? I've never had it.
EIA.
Yeah.
Exercise-induced asthma is...
Now, what's interesting here, Dr. Hoffman, is this person also says, as a side note, when I've been to the doctor in the past and have gotten a chest x-ray, they always say it looks like I have walking pneumonia.
Yeah.
Is that playing into what I'm feeling?
There's something going on here, and I hope that this person gets an expert evaluation by a pulmonologist, because this sounds more than just a mild exercise-induced asthma. But, you know, what I will say is there is a nutritional concomitant to that, is that vitamin C seems to mitigate exercise-induced asthma. But there are a lot of things that mitigate asthma, anti-inflammatories like fish oil, things like black cumin seed.
Mm-hmm. Orange oil, too.
Curcumin, you know, these are among the things that might be helpful for asthma if, you know, indeed this is asthma. But one known fact is that vitamin C seems to ameliorate specifically exercise-induced asthma. So a little vitamin C prior to a run might help. But, I got to tell you that even with that relative limitation, I'm pretty impressed with your running regimen, 35 miles a week, 8.5 minute clip. That's pretty respectable for, you know, a routine amateur
runner. That's really
something. Yeah, that's good. Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. That's about the time that good news is that we've slipped into unlock mode here, coming out of the lockdown, hopefully in some parts of the country and around the world. And so in the next few weeks, we'll reflect that. We'll take a mixture of questions related to COVID-19, which will remain topic A, but we'll start to normalize our weekly Q&A with Layla with questions of a general nature. So radio program at AOL.com. Keep those questions coming. Until next week, stay safe, stay well, and keep following our informative podcast, because we've got lots of information on the epidemic to share with you.
Yes, thank you for joining us.
Comment from you too as well, Layla. You're recording podcasts as well that are very... There's a nice one on vitamin D that you just recorded.
Thank you.
Good. All right, that's it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.